Now we will start the second speaker. Let me introduce the second speaker. He's David Ding, David Ding, Trinto Innovation Co-Lab from Canada. His topic is innovation learning for sustainability. What is smart for urban systems?
Thank you for inviting me to Wuhan to speak. We're passing out some of the postcards. I have a website at coevolving.com where you can find the presentations. Also, on February 21st, I had a book launch for a new book called Open Innovation Learning. And I will talk a little bit about that if we have time. But the focus of this meeting is on smarter cities and urban design. So I tried to focus this and talk about the question about innovation learning for sustainability and what does smarter mean for urban systems. Three ideas I'd like to cover. Firstly, what do we mean by a smarter system? Secondly, how does sustainability and service system science play into this? And thirdly, what do we mean by innovation learning? In 2008, and I was with IBM for 28 years, in 2008, IBM came up with an initiative called Smarter Planet. And Smarter Planet was a lot of the language that drove the words today when we use smarter cities. And I was involved with smarter cities as well. And what does Smarter Planet mean? It meant three things. We had this idea of a converging physical and digital infrastructure, and the idea that our world is becoming more instrumented, the world is becoming interconnected, and virtually all things, processes, and ways of working are becoming intelligent. And these are different ways of which we of thinking about the world. So in order to think about what this means, if we look at what it used to be, we used to have a pre-digital physical infrastructure where the world was invisible or unobserved. So now we can observe things through instruments that we could not observe before. Before, the world was analog and synchronous communications. We had to talk together in time, and we would discuss person to person and machine to machine. But in effect, the world has become interconnected, and now we are having a lot more communications, person to person, and machine to machine. Finally, the last idea about things used to be dumb or unresponsive to interaction. And today, everything is becoming intelligent. So we have small computer chips, and a lot of the things that come out of the fab labs are at that level. They assume that we put intelligence in the chip. The way the infrastructure has advanced has been in three eras, as IBM has declared them. The first is the tabulating era. And when we start off at the history of IBM, the tabulating era was punch cards. And what we were doing then is counting. And that's all we were doing was counting on punch cards. Then we went into the programming era, and what we have is if-then logic and loops. So anyone that has ever done a programming language knows about if-then. That is a programmatic way of doing it. It is a machine that does things over and over the same way every time. We are now moving towards a cognitive era where we're looking for a man-machine symbiosis in cooperative interaction. And Licklider was a person that did this and did the research of the 1960s, but we're just catching up with the technologies today where we can do this. And so this is an example of an augmented reality device. And so if you look on your phone, you can see the street, and you can see things on the street that your eyes can't see when you're there. These three eras are different in the way that we've been looking at the world. If we assume that, and Susu had me come 1 year ago to teach a class at Tongji University, a lot of the way that universities teach is they assume we are back in this era, in the first one, in the tabulating era, that what we need to do is count. And statistics is all about counting things. But then we have this idea that we can actually interact with data, but we're moving to an era where, in effect, we have the machines doing things on our behalf. We have, as an example, doing search on computers, And it's quite common now that when you type in your search, before you finish typing things in, the machine already has an idea of what you're asking for. And that's a different type of environment. The philosophical foundations that we're working through are changing about the way that we should look at things. The typical way we look at systems is we have a system and we have an environment that is outside the system. What we need to do is change to a world where we are looking at how systems interact with each other, how wholes interact with each other. Initially, this was because we would have one person and we would have another person and how we would communicate. But now that's more complicated because we have a machine, and you may be communicating with a machine, and the machine can interact with you. So there are three ways that we can think about this. We have lifelines, and so now we are thinking about time as opposed to thinking about one point in time. And we have the idea of habit. So as opposed to being goal-oriented, how is it that we actually walk every day? We walk by habit. We don't have to think about where our legs are going. That's a habit we learn. And when you think about that, we start thinking about machines. Machines will start demonstrating habits in that sort of sense. The way that neural networks work, the way that artificial intelligence works, is much more like an insect rather than thinking about it like a machine that has a goal. So the bank machine I had shown on the previous slide, what it does, it gives out money every time. But maybe it would be different if it was that when you went to a bank machine, every time you wanted to put in money, and you never used the case of coming that it would ask you if you want to take out money, the habit would be that you would be coming to the machine at the same time and it would learn and respond to that. The second idea is about agencing as opposed to agency. And we have the idea of multiple people interacting with each other. So today we think about our phones and we each interact and we look at our phones, but in effect the person that you're interacting with is with you at the same time. And so there's an agencing happening at that. Finally, we have the idea of attentionality rather than intentionality. I like this picture of people jumping in the pool together because what are they paying attention to when they're jumping in the pool together? The main thing is not to land on each other. They may want to jump and land in the water, but if they hit each other, that's a bigger problem than just trying to get into the water. The second idea about sustainability and service system science. I like the research of Tim Ingold, and he was looking at this research by Knight about foresters in uplands Japan. And the idea they had that was cited there was that in Japan, in the mountains, they believe that trees have a first life and a second life. What happens is that a forester takes care of a tree for 30 years, and then you cut down the tree, and the tree looks after you for 30 years because you live inside the tree. So there's a first life and there's a second life to trees. The problem we have is that when we think about this, this is a way of working with nature that is not natural. When we have, as an example, these large pillars that are up here, it's possible that you need more than 30 years for a tree. And so they have rituals in Japan where they have special trees that are marked by the ancestors. And before you cut down that tree, you have to pray to your ancestors to get permission to cut down that tree, plus you have to plant new trees. So this is a cycle that happens in systems and happens in ecology. And when we talk about urban systems, what we should be thinking about is not about preserving form, but continuing a life cycle. A lot of the ideas about preserving form, when we think about sustainability, they think we want things to not change. But that's really not what's happening. If you think about the tree grows and changes over time. So what we want to do is continue the life cycle of the tree. How do we do that? We cut down the tree that is old and we plant new trees, and it could take 30 or 60 years for that tree to grow, but it will grow again and you need to replace it in that way. The problem that's been happening in Japan is that they end up building these ugly houses that are no longer made of these trees, and they they fall apart. And people expect the house to live forever. But it's concrete and it doesn't live forever. You end up also with the idea that conservationists come in and say, we should not cut down trees. We should always have trees and leave them there because that's the way they're meant to be. But trees get old and they die as well, and sometimes you need to clear the trees so that the new trees can grow. Now, if we move this into the world, because I come from business, with the way that we should think about this is there's an idea of what is called offerings. Offerings come in three forms. There's the physical product, there's a service in the infrastructure, and there's a personal relationship. And you can do this in three dimensions. And so here's an example that was originally done by Rafael Ramirez and Johan Valin, where you think about automobiles. And so General Motors would have the hardware, they would have the software, and then they have the people content, the peopleware. With Toyota, they would have more people content. And you can make these, offerings different shapes, and we should think about how we do that over time. An offering from a systems perspective could be an input, it could be an output, it could be an input or a co-creation. So here we have offering output production. In this case, we have a pedicab, and what do? They just get in the cab. This is a system that works with this person doing all the pedaling. He does all the work, and this is pure consumption. We just get in, we take the system as output, and that's all we do. There is also offerings input co-production. In this case, person buys their own bicycle, and they own it, and they have to fix it themselves. What's happening is we now are looking at new forms of value-elevating co-creation. So this is actually a photograph from Boston, but this is a co-op, and they own the bicycles. And so here, I understand there are businesses that are starting up, and you see the bicycles all around. But if it was a co-op, you would actually own part of the company that owned the bicycle. So in one sense, you would be in this mode where you actually own the bicycle, but you own part of the company that owns the bicycle. So it's a different way of working. And this is a value-elevating co-creation because it requires participation by all the parties. Now this gets into how we actually make these, and this is where the social element comes in. There are commitments that we make between individuals, between companies and businesses, and there are various types of commitments we make. So we make a commitment to produce a deliverable. So if I want to give you an automobile, you can buy an automobile, but then the manufacturer can walk away. You own the automobile. The second one is a commitment to follow a process. The commitment to follow a process is different from the output because, as an example, most laws and most legal systems work as a commitment to follow a process. When you go to court, you follow the court process. They do not guarantee that you will win or you lose, but you follow that process. There's a commitment to follow provide a capability. The capability happens, as an example, when you have a mobile phone and you pick up your mobile phone and you dial, you assume that they will give you enough capacity that the line is not busy. That is not the deliverable, that's not the process, but the capability. And then the one that's the longest is the commitment to a relationship. It turns out that there are a lot of failures on commitments, but human beings actually forgive them quite often. Machines don't forgive, but human beings say, you got it wrong this time, it's okay, we'll move on, we have a longer term relationship and we should maintain that. The relationship can be the most important. But the important thing to understand about these types of commitments is that they are a choice, that you choose what type of commitments you make. Commitments chain to each other. So what happens is that when I make a commitment, it impacts someone else, it impacts someone else. And so we need to communicate better what our commitments are and how they connect to each other. The commitments are not just talk. They come through to action. So we have the language that happens as rhetoric, where we have the account of our past history together and some guidance on future action. And you have the action as behavior, where you have more disclosure or less disclosure. So if you have more disclosure and you have a public conversation. Everyone gets the same thing. If you have less disclosure, you have privacy, and the relationship is important because a relationship is between individuals. It's not between you and a company where they treat you all the same. I'll leave this, and people can find the slides on the website, or Wujing can point you to where the slides are. There are ideas behind what's called supply-side sustainability, and the main points are managing productive systems rather than for the outputs. The productive system, so I gave the example of the bicycle, you could just get more bicycles, or you could join a cooperative, or you could join a company where you share the bicycles. Managing systems are managing their context. You work to the next level up, the containing system. Identify what dysfunctional systems lack and supply only that. So we had the question about funding. The question is, do you need to fund things? Maybe you want to do things that people naturally already do. And so in the Fab Lab, I've met people that are makers, and they can't help themselves. They make things all the time. You don't pay them, they make things all the time. You use them because they will make things all the time. You provide them what they need. But saying, I'm going to go and pay someone to be a maker, I'm going to start a new lab, I'm going to bring in and I'm going to train people to be makers, no, you don't do that. You do what people already do, and then you give them what they need. Deploy ecological processes to subsidize management of effort rather than conversely. Let the trees grow. Don't go and try to engineer the trees. And the last one, understand the problem of diminishing returns to problem solving. What that happens is that sometimes when you are solving the problem, you are solving a very small problem, and it's better to tackle a bigger problem and solve it. It's sometimes easier to solve a little problem in a short term, but we should stop and actually look at longer term problems and solve those. The last idea, I'll go very quickly over innovation learning. What the book is about, this is based off 10 years of history at IBM. And IBM came in and was looking at innovation and is one of the original case studies for innovation. But it took IBM probably 6 or 7 years to learn how to do innovation. So declaring that you are all innovators now and then walking away is not the right way to do this. In the 21st century, the nature of innovation has changed. And this is what IBM internally around 2008 was saying, that innovation is open, collaborative, multidisciplinary, and global. Open, collaborative, multidisciplinary, and global. Well, what does that mean? The difference is that in the 21st century, the open means open strategy and open standards. And if we're looking at smart cities have to work on standards. We can't each individually build our own technologies and expect them to talk to each other. We need to have standards so they can communicate. It is not good to have a private strategy and a private method for one company or one city or one town or one individual. We need to have standards of ways that people work together. The second idea about collaboration is about relationship, and this is apart from the transactional. So I previously talked about commitment to relationship. We need to have longer-term relationships where we collaborate. And the reason for that is we're looking at co-producing learning. We need to learn together. The conversations are multidisciplinary as opposed to being analytical problem solving. We can't just solve a problem that happens directly in front of us. We need to look at what is the bigger problem that's behind that. And finally, when we say global, it's about global talent as opposed to colonial trade. The idea that you could take people and move people around. No, you need to educate people in every geography in the world, and they need to be able to communicate around the world. Now, people tend to like the idea of equilibrium. And I like this term that comes, if you look, and this is very old. This is a 1910 letter to American teachers of history. And the idea is stable equilibrium is death. So if people like a stable system, you need to understand that a stable system in systems theory is a dead system. Every other system is living. And what we have is the idea that nature is inevitable, is not predictable, and it changes, and we need to be able to handle that. So how do we learn? There are two ways of learning, and there's a differentiation that Tim Ingold has, which is a difference between what he calls the transmission of representation. So I come with a book and I throw the book at you. The second is an education of attention. So education of attention is what we're doing here. Anything that I'm showing you on these slides is not because you can't read them. What happens is that when I'm spending time with you, I am directing your attention towards specific things. The idea is a difference between the maze. The maze is not one path, but has multiple choices. When you go into a maze, you have multiple ways in, you have multiple ways out. But with the labyrinth, there's one way in and there's one way out. Why would you be interested in going into a labyrinth? Well, it turns out that the experience of being in the labyrinth is part of attention. It is like going to an art gallery. Why would you go to the same art gallery after you've been there 10 times? Even if you see the same paintings, you pay attention to different things. In open innovation learning, I've been looking forward for technologies in which we could apply the open innovation learning ideas. And there's three that I've been thinking about that are written in chapter 9 of the book. One is about polycentric governance. How is it with deglobalization, Brexit, and all this? How is it that we work together? How is it we innovate together in this new world? Secondly, there's the Internet of Things, where we have this physical activity, electronics. And thirdly, we have cognitive computing, which is the intelligence augmentation of that we have with machines. There are three theories that are built in the book. There is innovation learning for, innovation learning by, and innovation learning alongside. Innovation learning for, there are three types of learning. One would be proto-learning. Proto-learning is just learning to do one thing. Deutero-learning is learning to do multiple things. And trito-learning, and this is what our lab is focused on. Trito learning is focused on doing multiple things in different environments. The second of innovation learning by, there is learning by doing. Learning by doing is doing the same thing over and over again. Learning by making, which is involved with getting involved with the materials, and learning by trying. Learning by trying actually assumes that you are allowed to fail. And you want to fail, but you want to fail fast. The last one of innovation learning alongside, because we are now walking alongside each other, there is the idea of polyrhythmia entangling eurythmia. Eurythmia is what we have in the heart, but when we have multiple people working together, they work at different rhythms. We have regenerating, entangling, preserving. This is what we're saying about the trees. The trees will regenerate by themselves, but some people want to preserve the trees. And then this idea of less leading to more rather than more leading to more. So this was written originally in the time when they had nuclear missiles, and having more nuclear missiles is worse. You want less nuclear missiles, and that's what we need to in the past. And all this has to do with the difference between systematic and systemic. And systematic, when you talk about systemic, you're talking about genotypic change, degenerational change, you're talking about living systems, and you're talking about co-responding, where we have multiple parties working with each other. So for those of you interested, at openinnovationlearning.com, the books are available. It's open access. You can download it for free. If you have problems, let me know, and I have a special site where I guarantee you can download this book. Thank you.
Thank you very much. But David was working in IBM 28 years, so he's a very good scientist. And today's presentation is a different angle to focus on the smart cities and system. Thank you very much for your wonderful speech. And now it's the question time. Do you have some questions?
I have a comment.
Okay.
Just a comment for your question here. For your question, I think David actually explained beautifully when there's a picture of the mobile phone, and he shows you see the mobile phone, but the mobile phone can tell you more information than you can see.
And there's an invisible. Okay, so the picture where David shows you, there's the phone. and the phone can show you more than what you can see. He also mentioned very clearly that the communities and all of those things are happening all the time. It's what you focus on. So,
Attention.
So if you want to just comment on the attention.
Yes. Attention changes, there's multiple things happening. One is in the education system and one is with the technologies that we're working with. In the education system, as an example, in Finland, they no longer teach by subject. And why is they don't teach by subject? Because when you teach by subject, it takes things apart. So if you are thinking about studying a city, how is it we should study a city? Should we study by taking the city apart? And they say, no, we should understand the systems. We understand the water system. We understand the food system. Well, how does geography fit into the food system? How does mathematics fit into the food system? Ah, there's the change. So what they're doing is they're changing the way that you pay attention to things. The second thing about technology is, in our home, we're now playing with new technologies. We have a new Google Home, or something. Alexa has Amazon, where you talk to your computer cloud. And so we ask, what is the weather today? And it speaks back to us. That is paying attention, because what happens, it recognizes when I am speaking, it recognizes when my wife is speaking, and I have four sons who sound almost identical to me, but somehow it recognizes how all of them are different. That is paying attention. So computers are no longer programmed in the way they used to be, because if the computer was programmed the way it used to be, no matter who asked the question, what is the weather, they would get the same answer. But if I want it in Fahrenheit and someone else wants it in Celsius, it would go, oh, pay attention to that. That's how it's different.
Just one for. Is that how, any other questions? Okay, please.
Sometime when you see Susu at her computer. I claim that Susu has the most Chinese computer of anyone in this room. She has a Lenovo ThinkPad computer. It is running Deepin Linux. Deepin Linux is developed in Wuhan. Did you know this? No, no one is paying attention. She has been working on this computer with Deepin Linux, and I have to be her technical support. Maybe other people can help her. But my question is, why would you be using a Macintosh, an American computer with an American operating system, when you are in the city that is leading in Linux? This is paying attention.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, thank you, Dr. Derry, because he has to stay here 9 days from Canada and go back. So. Thank you very much for your wonderful speech.